This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All righty then. Welcome to a Wednesday edition of One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. A lot to discuss today, not only as it pertains to the Bills and their offseason plans going forward, but around the NFL as well as we close in on Super Bowl 57 this weekend. But before we get into that, we've got some free agency discussions to undertake here. And in the second hour of the show, we're actually going to kind of get a little bit of a 411 on some of the Senior Bowl talent that was on display last week from the executive director of the Senior Bowl, Jim Nagy. And there's an interesting draft history for the Bills as it pertains to the Senior Bowl, but we'll get into all of that in the second hour of the show. Here in the first hour, we're talking about a bunch of stuff, and the Derek Carr stuff to me, you know, visiting the Saints, and I realize nothing's imminent down there. This is just a look-see kind of deal because Derek Carr has this no-trade clause in his contract, and he has to go kind of kick the tires on any prospective team that the Raiders might trade him to. And the clock is ticking here. We're a week away from a $40 million guarantee kicking in for his contract, whether he's playing for the Raiders or somebody else.
So, and he's going to a team that is $6 gazillion over the
well,
cap.
Well, again, it's just a look-see. He's kicking the tires.
Yeah.
And if I'm Derek Carr, I'm saying no to the Saints. I don't care if Dennis Allen is there and, you know, you had him as a head coach as a rookie with Oakland back then. Because who the hell is going to be lining up for them? I mean, Steve, they're not only $57 million over the cap. That's the least of their problems. They can't – they're at a point now where – they kick the can down the road every single year. And it's to the point now where it's almost become laughable because people are like, well, they're the reason, they're proof that the cap isn't real. You can keep just pushing money into the future. But I think you're getting to a point here where, I mean, you can restructure contracts and probably save $60 to $70 million and get under. But in terms of cutting players, the cap hit that you incur, dead cap, when you cut players, the Saints right now, and I'm going to credit the proper people here, overthecap.com put out this interesting thread on Twitter. They outline which teams have the least cap flexibility when it comes to cutting player contracts off their roster to try to generate cap savings. In terms of cap room that can be created by cutting players, the Saints are in the fourth worst position in the NFL. If they cut every player with a positive net cap savings, every possible option, they only generate $23 million in cap savings and they're 57 over. So they're going to have to restructure a boatload of contracts to save more money just to get under. Forget about having the money to sign people. And Derek Carr, if you sign him, you're immediately going to have to redo his deal to make it fit.
Oh, yeah.
It's a veritable mess.
It is.
I don't even know why they're entertaining
signing.
That's
why Sean McPayton left. He could see it coming.
Sean McPayton.
Sean Payton left. Now he's at Denver. Took a year. I said, you know what? We had a good run. I got to the playoffs, got deep in the playoffs, got stabbed in the back twice by two different miracle plays that kept me out of three Super Bowls instead of just one. I'm going to take it off. I'm going to go. Because, you know, I took a year off.
That's right. There are three other teams that are in a worse position than the Saints in terms of cutting players to save cap room. They are, in reverse order, in the third worst situation, the Rams, who can only eliminate or create $19 million in cap space by cutting players with a positive cap savings. The 49ers, who can only generate $17 million in cap space. And leading the league this offseason with the least cap flexibility by cutting players, the Eagles, $13 million. The Colts, by the way, can create the most cap space through cutting players to the tune of $88 million. So the Saints and a lot of these other teams are going to resort to restructuring a bunch of contracts. And I would imagine the Bills have to probably have a mix of cutting players and restructuring others to create needed cap space for themselves as well.
Yeah, they may. Yeah, and for the Bills, I mean, you talk about, like, the perfect example would be Nyheim Hines. They're saying, listen, we're not going to keep you around for $4 million. We'll keep you around for the veteran minimum or this number or whatever number it is. We're going to cut you and sign you back to this deal.
Well, no, they just restructure. They don't have to cut him.
They don't have to cut him, but they could. Or they could restructure him. But
it's probably a restructure.
Yeah, so if Hines goes for that,
well,
he may say, forget it, I'm going to go out on the market. Now, a guy like Hines, who finished up with a little bit of a flurry for Buffalo, may think he could do better, or at least the same, out on the market.
Yeah.
But it's a running back market that is flush with players.
It's considered a strong
running
back free agent market. Not that people are ready to overpay for running backs. But
it would
still.
He's not going to bust the bank anyway, but still.
I don't know why you wouldn't restructure to stay in Buffalo and have money put in your pocket.
Right.
Which is what a restructure essentially does. Put more money in the player's pocket for doing the team a favor, and there you go. I mean, you can even extend them a year and spread the money out further. I would anticipate that's what they do with Nyheim Hines, among a host of other players. But from Derek Carr, Steve, to Aaron Rodgers, who revealed in an interview yesterday that prior to determining his path for the 2023 season, he'll be going on an isolation retreat that includes 4 nights of complete darkness. Rodgers gave no indication of his football plans on the Pat McAfee show this week, where he makes a weekly appearance. He said retiring is on the table, playing for the Packers is on the table, playing elsewhere is on the table. But before making a decision on that, he's going to be alone with his thoughts in a dark room in an unnamed location, and it's taking place soon. Now, you and I had some fun with this yesterday in our office.
Brownie came up. Brownie, he's from Dallas. He's from Long Island, so he's seen the atmosphere that surrounds it. And he came up with a line, and I couldn't stop laughing.
I said, if you want to play if you want to live in total darkness, just go play quarterback for the Jets.
I couldn't stop laughing. I could not stop laughing.
The quarterback position has been in darkness for 50 years with the Jets.
That's correct. That's correct. And I think in today's NFL, it's the one time where the Jets could actually do – I mean, we've seen them do some good things in this last season. And, you know, they got Nate Hackett in New York, which – I still don't believe that the relationship that Nate Hackett claims to have had with Aaron Rodgers and the coaching relationship that they had over their time in Green Bay together.
Not going to swing the pendulum?
That is not swinging the pendulum for Aaron Rodgers.
Well, 50 years of quarterback
purgatory.
That's being nice.
Right.
That's being generous, Steve. I mean, it's 50 years of a quarterback desert. Like, there's been some middling guys that have played okay for them, but the top of the heap.
Fitz might have been the guy.
The top of the heap. Even he couldn't get him to the playoffs.
Well, I know, but.
Like the top of the heap in the last 30 years, Boomer Esiason? Like
Sanchez
Vinny
got him
Testaverde?
Sanchez got him to the championship
game. Did
he get
him there?
Well,
or did the defense
get
him?
He was taking snaps. You got to give him some credit.
All right.
It's rough.
Been abysmal.
I'm just saying this again. I've said it a bunch. Aaron Rodgers is like he's a young, rich, single guy in the United States who is not accountable to anybody.
Yeah.
He's going to do what he wants to do.
Right.
Including going to take psychedelic drugs in Peru or wherever that was.
Yeah, the ayahuasca ceremonies.
And then now he's going to do the isolation retreat, which is I guess it's 4 days and nights in total darkness.
So he actually gave a few details on what this entails. Are you ready?
Yeah.
So he's going to be in a single room in a little house with blacked out windows, and there are only 2 slots where food is dropped in and there is no other human contact. Other than that, nothing. No books, no tablets, no devices to be had, and That's it. Now, he did say you can leave early if, you know, you're done. You're just like, okay, 2 days is enough. I don't need
right.
it. So you can bail early, but that's the only human contact, food being slid to you through a slot for 4 days, and otherwise you're just sitting there in complete and total darkness. We should also mention last year, Steve. Remember what he did last year? The 12-day panchakarma cleanse?
Yeah.
Vomiting and forced diarrhea as a way of flushing your system.
Yeah, that's not for me.
This guy's out there on the fringes.
Yes. Which is, you know, I call him, he's this wild donkey. And he does, and I get it. I mean, hey, that's what I'm saying. He's not accountable to anybody. He doesn't have a significant other that we know of. He's by himself, and he does all this stuff. The 4 days, I say this, and a lot of people think, well, dark, if you've ever been in total darkness, like in a real cave where there is absolutely no light.
Yeah, it's dark. You can't see the hand in front
it
of
your is,
face.
It is, it's different. It's different kind of darkness. And that's what they're talking about with this thing. Now, the thing that gets you to is, I wonder how quiet it is as well. Because silence is also a, you know, an isolation thing too. So it's dark and silent, and you're your own.
Maybe you get
companion.
To go in there with noise canceling headphones.
Well, yeah, or I don't know, small.
If it's a little house by a road, yeah, it's not going to be.
Who's
silent.
Living upstairs? You know, it's like, hey, keep it down up there. You know,
I'm in an isolation retreat.
But man, blackness, darkness with no light it's hard.
Yeah,
it's hard. So all of that. Goes into, okay, that's awesome. He's going to meditate, you know, whatever, to his heart's content and come out of there, like, what, different?
I think he believes that it'll give him clarity on a decision. Like,
well, he's going to find out how good a company he is by himself, which may be a revelation in and of itself.
There you go. He might be woefully disappointed.
Maybe. So, it's something else.
This guy's, oh my gosh.
Good for him. Let him do it. And he's trying to, and that's, here's the thing. Think about it. He didn't have, who's he going to bounce these ideas off of? Like who?
Well, himself.
Like whether
for the
to
next
stay,
4 days.
Whether to retire. I mean the decision we're talking about.
Yeah.
Just to keep playing, not to keep playing. You know, the guy's made a pile
play
of cash.
For another team.
He's made a pile of cash. Does he demand a trade? Does he want to play for the Packers? Is he going to be like Brett Favre and go off and not leave and then leave and then not leave again and then at the end everybody wishes he was gone?
Yeah.
You know, how's it going to end for him? How's he want it to look at the end of it? What's he want to do this next year? All of that stuff. He's got nobody to bounce this stuff off of. Got no significant other. He's by himself, which is his preferred life.
He's a lone wolf.
Yeah. He's a wild donkey, man.
Yeah. The more you say it, the more
nobody.
I believe it.
Hey, nobody approaches a wild donkey. You just leave him alone.
Yeah,
you know, it's like the little mining town where some, you know, an old guy died and his donkey's left alone, and it just makes for itself, and it just kind of hangs around the village. That's him. The United or the planet, but the United States is the village, and he just shows up kind of where he shows up.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable.
He's living up to the California in him with all of these things that he's been doing, whether it's the ayahuasca
it does
stuff
seem
in Peru,
a little bit.
The violent body cleanse that he did last year.
It does seem a little bit hippie-like, you know,
yeah,
kind of.
He's out there.
Yeah.
Where's he from? Chino, California? I think that's his hometown.
You got me. But, you know.
I know he's from out there somewhere.
It's a story that's going to go on. We're going to have to find out. It's not like he's going to transform anything when he goes in there and does that. It's just, and how, my opinion about decisions of the nature we're talking about, Brownie, the decision, like when my kid, I had five kids, they all graduated from college.
Yep.
It seems like the biggest most important decision ever, which college you're going to go to, where are you going to go, how's it going to go, what's it going to be like? That's not the important decision. The important decision is, what are you going to do when you get there? Mm. That's the important thing. I don't care if you go to a community college like I did and then to a four-year school or just go to a trade school. It's what happens after you make the decision that counts, and that has nothing to do with an isolation retreat.
Well, maybe he feels this will allow him to make a better decision because there'll be no outside noise, quote unquote, for him to deal with. Yeah. He'll be alone in his thoughts, which more often than not, I think he would prefer to be. Alone in his thoughts.
Absolutely. I think that's his
wheelhouse.
That's his mode of transportation right there, solitude. And I don't have a problem with it. I'm just saying the decisions you make in life are about what you do after you make it.
Yes.
Especially this one.
Well, right. And so we'll all wait with bated breath to see how the 4 days in darkness goes for Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
Eager to hear what decision he has rendered for the future of his playing career.
A small room in a small house.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah. Blacked out windows.
There's got to be
two slots for food.
Yeah, there's got to be it's got to be a thing, right? I mean, somebody's got this little facility, right?
Yeah.
Where they do this for people? Or does he just have his, you know, third cousin or a guy he knew who's got a place he's going to use? You know what I mean?
Money is no object. I'm sure he's got no problem finding somebody that does this. But it's probably somebody he knows said, oh, yeah, you should try this out. And he's like, oh, that sounds good. You know, that kind of thing.
Try what? That's when I go, what? What? Try what?
Try what now?
What are you saying?
Thank you, no.
And so, like, there's no light?
Right.
Explain that to me. I get it.
Whatever gets your rocks off.
Total isolation. Okay.
Yeah. You mentioned Sean Payton, and we saw this after we got off the air yesterday. Terry Bradshaw leaking some information from a conversation he had with Sean Payton on the Fox desk, because as you know, Sean Payton was working for Fox this past season and was in studio, you know, with Terry and the crew there. And, you know, he and Terry had a bunch of conversations as the season was wrapping up, and he was clearly going to be in the conversation for one of the five head coaching posts that were open. And he was contacted by both Arizona and by Denver. And Terry Bradshaw said Sean Payton didn't want the Arizona head coaching job because he did not want to work with Kyler Murray, who, word is already out, and we've talked about it an umpteen number of times, is a total me guy and is not a leader and is not, you know, the selfless kind of person that you need to be. I mean, you got to be the man at quarterback, but you also have to do right by the organization and your teammates at every turn.
Yeah.
And he comes up terribly short in those two areas. I think the word is out on him now. And Sean Payton is like, thank you, no. I am not going there. Now, apparently, Terry Bradshaw said he also didn't want to work with Russell Wilson,
right,
who, as we know, details are trickling out now that, you know, the guy had his own personal coach in the building. They gave him his own office at the Broncos team facility to work in and watch his film, you know, corner office for the quarterback.
Yeah.
I mean, what are we doing? So he wasn't too crazy about working in Denver either, but he acquiesced and he's going to try to make it work. But as Steve pointed out yesterday, you heard Peyton's comment when he was asked, hey, what about, you know, Russell Wilson having his personal coach inside the facility? Yeah, I'm not too familiar with that, but that's not going to happen here.
Right. And I'll say this about the Kyler Murray stuff, it just as a leadership 101 statement, your quarterback has to be somebody who other guys want to join. They want to go, you know, they want to be, you know, they want to be on board with. They want to join with him to do this, to win games. That is not where Kyler Murray's wheelhouse is.
I mean, think about this. Cliff Kingsbury, who was his college coach, was named head coach of the Cardinals, convinced the organization with the first pick in the draft they should draft him as their quarterback and throw Josh Rosen overboard, who they just drafted 10th the year before.
Well.
And now here we are 3 years later. Kyler's got his money, and Kingsbury's out of a job. Not that he's too disappointed. He's vacationing in Thailand and is going to get paid for, like, the next 3 years for doing nothing.
But let's face it, though. Kyler Murray, is, for all his shortcomings, is still better than Josh Rosen.
Sure.
But you're right. And I can't remember the year Kyler comes out, who were the other quarterbacks in that draft? And I couldn't even tell you.
What is that? The 20 draft?
2020
that's the Tua,
draft.
That's Tua and Herbert? Let me see.
Well, there you go. There's your answer. If they skipped over Tua and Herbert to draft Kyler, that's an enormous mistake. And everybody did. I mean, Herbert.
No,
went
sorry, it was the 19 draft.
Okay. Yeah, I remember being. We were at that combine when Kyler came in, and he was like, what, 5'10" and an eighth.
He's 5'8" and change, I think.
Oof. Now, I think he might be taller. Well, I don't know if he is or not, but man, oh man.
Yeah, so he was first in the 2019 draft.
Yeah.
So the other quarterbacks taken, Daniel Jones, 6.
Okay.
Dwayne Haskins,
all right.
15. Yeah, it wasn't a good quarterback.
Well, there you go. Here, I mean, so. That's
Drew Lock in round 2.
Well, there you go. That's you have no choice. Who else are you going to take?
Yeah.
Murray's the only guy that can really play and make plays on the field, even though he's got his shortcomings and the team is like looking at him sideways, like, are you in this with us or not?
Right.
He's got the worst body language of any player in the league.
It's not
good. He's got worse body language than a diva wideout, any of them.
Yeah, and for me, I don't know in this league, with the margin so thin, how you ever win with a guy like that, even though he is immensely talented.
He's really talented. He's got a live arm, and he's fast, very twitchy, explosive runner. But he's 5'8", struggles to see it, struggles to throw it on time. You know, and he had some good players around him. DeAndre Hopkins is as good as it gets.
And they traded for Marquise Hollywood Brown to try to accommodate Murray, one of his college teammates at Oklahoma.
It is a real intellectual puzzle to try and build an offense around a guy with a unique skill set. That's what coaches have to do. And Kyler Murray, you think about what you're dealing with, a guy who can run it and play some street yard football, but he can't see it because he's short. And if the passing lanes aren't there, he can't get it out of there. And you've got to build an offense around that with players who have some abilities. And you're talking about offensive linemen as well. What do you need? What kind of offensive lineman? What kind of running game do you need to aid a guy like Kyler Murray? It's a puzzle that there may not be a solution to. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I know.
Even though the guy's got some good gifts, you know, it's a puzzle that you can't figure out. How do you build it? Particularly the way the game is called and officiated today and the skill sets you've got to acquire with so many guys to help him accentuate what he does well and then the stuff that he can't do at all. How do you build that? That's a tough puzzle to solve.
Yeah. Best of luck, Arizona. And Monty Ossenfort, the new GM.
You got to try and make it work, right? They sign him to an agreement.
Well, you're on the hook now.
You're on the hook now because he's pitching a fit. The day he's eligible for an extension, he pitches a fit and throws.
I'm taking all my stuff off
my
social media.
Yeah, he makes it clear that he expects it to happen, even though they haven't won anything.
Yeah.
So he's that kind of guy. And you got to weigh how long do you want to wait before you get a shot at another guy at a spot in the draft where you could actually get somebody who can play or put up with him.
Mm-hmm.
Or try and make it work with him. And, they made their decision and – and now they're stuck.
Yeah. The NFL released the list of players who were invited to the NFL Combine coming up the first week of March, but technically the last day of February, February 28th through March 6th. Steve and I will be there, as will the show, One Bills Live, from Tuesday to Friday. So be sure to tune in that week as we will have wall-to-wall coverage of the NFL Combine. 319 prospects, Steve. If you had to guess the two schools with the most prospects, who would you guess?
Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia.
Correct. First and second, respectively. Alabama with 13 prospects invited. Georgia with 12. The SEC looking pretty darn good.
Pretty, pretty good.
So, a lot of crimson down there and a lot of red and black.
Yeah.
For sure. Not to anybody's surprise.
Florida's got a bunch of guys down there, too. They had a pretty good list of guys. And as you'd see, LSU's got a bunch of guys in there, too.
Yeah.
A good list of guys. So, it's the usual suspects, as we would all, deduce. But it's fun to see, there's some schools that have, like, one guy. you know. Miami, University of Miami has two. That's a surprise to me.
They've had a bunch of coaching changes the last few years, and I think that kind of compromises your recruiting efforts, you know, unless the new guy coming in the door can really recruit the heck out of people. It's tough. I mean, it's tough. So, yeah. But the other schools that you mentioned with a lot of representatives, they're also in the SEC.
Right.
Florida, LSU. It's nuts.
Yeah.
They just completely corner the market on the top of the heap, you know, that the high schools around this country have to offer. It's crazy. But nothing has changed in that regard. I mean, you're going to have some Big Ten schools, Michigan, Ohio State.
Michigan's got a good list, yes.
You know, they're going to have a host of players there. But even Ohio State has eight, which isn't a ton. So, yeah. Oklahoma usually does pretty well. I think they have seven. Oregon has six. Penn State has seven.
Yeah, Oklahoma's got seven. Yeah, there's some guys. Michigan's got a ton, too. Penn State's got seven or eight. Pittsburgh's got six. You know, so there's some of these are surprising, too, in the amount of guys they have. It's fun to look at because I was complaining to my co-host here today about having to learn the names of these guys and kind of do a deep dive on each of them, knowing that I will never utter their name ever again after, you know.
If they didn't get picked by the Bills, you got to flush them out of your head by like May 2nd.
Yes, because we got other things we need to talk about. But it is an exciting thing. It always takes me back to when I was coming out and thinking about getting drafted and what it meant to me and these young guys. And I'll tell you what, it's an enormous dream that these guys are chasing, these young kids are chasing. And you'd look at it's – and everything's different than it was, you know, that it has been in the past because of the transfer portal for these guys. Some of them have been to two or three different schools to play, trying to find a way to get on the field to begin with. And then to navigate all of that and to come out on the other end trying to get drafted in the NFL, it's an odyssey. It's an odyssey. And I think in a lot of times it makes these kids in some ways a little bit more mature and in other ways a little bit more jaded to come out.
Maybe.
You know, I was most of the guys I got drafted with, even the guys at higher-ups were like just starry-eyed. Just so it was so awesome to be thought of in that regard by the NFL, and I think nowadays guys are like, "Yeah, I figured I'd go about here, you know, or whatever. I should have gotten picked earlier, or you know, that kind of thing." It's a different world now, but it's still a huge dream that these guys are chasing.
And the combine is the second to last step in that pre-draft process, with pro days being the last step, or even 30 visits if you're one of the 30 invited by an NFL club. The one surprise school, and maybe it's not a surprise in light of the season they had, TCU, 9 players going to the combine from TCU. That's a great showing for them. We are talking Bills, though, today, and we are asking you on the Twitter poll, what Bills free agent will be the easiest to replace? Someone who, if they do not come back and are not re-signed, you're not in a full-blown panic. You actually think, okay, we should be able to find a capable replacement. You let us know at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to get on board, and we'll start taking your phone calls when we return. Here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And we know that the Bills are going to have 22 unrestricted free agents when we get to March 15th, unless some are re-signed prior to that date. And with all of that anticipated turnover, you know inevitably some are not going to be back on the roster in 2023, especially knowing Buffalo's tight cap situation. So what Bills free agent do you believe will be the easiest to replace? A player who, if they do not return, doesn't throw you into an outright panic. And explain why. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to get on board. And we lead off with the phones And batting leadoff for us today is Mark in Jersey City. What do you got for us, Mark, here on One Bills Live?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm going to go low-hanging fruit, Roger Saffold. He, for a team that passes the ball as much as the Bills do, I mean, he was not a good ad. That he was, I mean, it was either a holding penalty. Was it that game that he had like two penalties in a row, set them back? It was just, oh my God, it drove me nuts. And yeah, he's an easy guy. Steve mentioned a young player, Cody Mock. I could just definitely see them going O-line in the first round because he's versatile. He could play a bunch of positions. And they need some nasty up there. I mean, old guys that need those maintenance days. I think this team needs them to freshen up a little bit. So I think he's the easiest add, the easiest delete and fix, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I know some people will go down the list of free agents and they'll pick, you know, like Tommy Doyle, who didn't play this year, that kind of thing. He's easily replaced. Well, okay, yeah, I get it. But, yeah, Saffold is a guy who was on the field for almost 100% of the offensive snaps, if not all of them. And you'll have to find somebody who can hang in there. He's a 13-year vet who you kind of know how his ceiling is and you know where his floor is. And if you want the floor to be higher, like you say, Mark, I get it. And maybe you can draft a young kid who can do that. Brownie and I are going round and round about guys we've, you know, got a crush on but you don't know who's going to be available at number 27 and at number
it's hard to map that
and 52, out. I think is the other pick. I'm not sure. 40, it's 27
I think it's
and
60.
Is it 60? I thought it was a little earlier than that. Maybe it is. Maybe it's 54 too. I don't know. But anyway, it's hard to map that out. Who's going to be available at that spot? And I'll say this. I've got it written on the whiteboard in the office. The Bills draft traits. So if you want to find a guy that they're going to get where there's going to be a ton of guys available that are all kind of equal, maybe not, they're going to draft the guy that's bigger and stronger and faster.
That's 59.
They're going to pick at 59. So, and I've been going down the list, and I'm thinking an interior offensive lineman just like you are for the first-round pick, and we'll see. But Saffold, you're right. That's kind of the type of player worth asking about. Is it going to be a Tremaine Edmonds or Jordan Poyer or Roger Saffold or Devin Singletary, some of these guys that are up? Who's going to be a definite replacement? You know, I think they'd love to keep all four of them. But you're right. Saffold's a guy who took 100% of the snaps. And you know, at the end, the offensive line seemed to be trending down, not trending up.
Yeah, and if you remember last year during free agency when Saffold signed rather early in the process, the general consensus on the signing, and I think Brandon Bean even mentioned this, was that they saw him as a guy that could help them in the run front. They still were satisfied with his movement skills, even though he was a 12-year veteran at the time when they signed him. And I think they genuinely thought he'd help them win the battle at the line of scrimmage when they're trying to fire off and get some traction in the run game. And while the team did finish as a top 10 rushing offense, I just didn't get the sense that people were pointing to the offensive line as the primary reason why. People obviously gravitate to Josh and his exploits as a runner, which a lot of times are on extended plays, broken plays, you know, where he's just making something happen.
Right.
That's not to say there weren't design runs, but I think we can all agree there were far fewer of them for him this season.
Absolutely.
Than we had seen in the past. And so because of that, it's very hard to just hand out the credit to the guys up front. And I'm not saying they didn't do well blocking in the run game. There were certainly examples of that through the course of the season. I guess my point is Saffold was brought in here, I think, with the primary thought like, hey, here's a guy that can help us win at the line of scrimmage in the run front. And I don't know that he met every expectation in that area. So I kind of understand where Mark's coming from as well.
And I'll say this, too. And I know we're all kind of recency biased here because of the way the season ended. I'll say this. I don't know, given – now, it's different because given the financial constraints we're talking about, being over the cap and all of that stuff, I wouldn't – be too sure that the Bills feel like they need to transform themselves. They're 13-3, and they were scoring points, and their defense was good. And you can say, you know, against really good teams, the Bills' defense didn't play well. You know, that's kind of the way good defenses do in the league. They don't play all that well against really great offenses because of the way the game's called. Even in the game against Cincinnati this last January, when the Bills got beat 27-17, the Bengals scored exactly at their season average. Exactly at their season average. They were 26 points and change on average during the regular season. They scored 27. I don't think that's a defense that's fallen down. The offense was scoring 28 and change for the season, and they scored 10. That's the problem, at least in that one single game. Now, certainly there are times during the regular season where the offense was on fire. But that's where you're at. You can't – I don't want to overreact to any one game, even if it is the last game of the season.
Right.
So I don't – my point is this. I don't know that you're going to see a transformational roster this offseason. And I don't think all the guys that people are kind of a little bit disgusted or disappointed in on the whole are as bad as we might look at them being at this point.
What Bills free agent do you see as the easiest to replace? You know they're not bringing all 22 back. If someone heads elsewhere, what player might not throw you into a panic because you believe the Bills will be able to find a capable replacement? 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Back to the phones we go, and to Tom in Rochester. What do you got for us, Tom? You're on One Bills Live.
Hi, guys. I think this is an actually, for me, it's an easy question. And I just talked to a screener, and he thinks Dane Jackson is a free agent. I wasn't sure. But if Dane Jackson is a free agent, he's far and away the easiest to replace, not because he's bad, but because they got two guys, you know, that are capable starters in the NFL basically sitting on the bench. So I think Dane Jackson is easily the guy most easily replaced.
All right. He is a restricted free agent, just so everybody knows. So I would anticipate, knowing the cost constraints for the Bills, they'll bring him back on a one-year qualifying offer, which is what you do with restricted free agents. They're pretty affordable money. If I remember seeing it, I think it's like 4.2 for corners at restricted. The numbers may have gone up a little bit for this coming year, but to me, he's affordable labor. And the Bills are going to be looking right for that at just about every position on the roster, not only just with a draft class, but with other guys that you can bring back in an affordable number. And you could do that with Dane Jackson. And quite frankly, I think if Kyir Elam takes another step, Dane Jackson is your corner that's on the bench that comes in case of injury, you know, behind Tre'Davious White and Kyir Elam and Taron Johnson in the slot, all things considered. So to sign a guy at an affordable price at a premium position who probably, if your first-round picks makes the necessary steps in the offseason, I don't think there's any reason to think that Elam won't. He's already being replaced anyway, at least as I see it.
Right. Even if he's not starting, like you say, if Christian Benford and Kyir Elam emerge and they'd rotate in and out with Tre'Davious White, seeing as how we all expect Tre'Davious to be better and better as this offseason goes on and get into next year more like he was in 2020. All of those things considered, you still need guys ready to play. And even if Dane Jackson turns into a depth piece, still a pretty good depth piece. He's got experience in the defense, experience starting. Whatever moment you put him in is not going to be too big for him. Yes, you could probably replace him, particularly if he's not going to start. I don't know how easy it will be to find a guy who is as well versed or could be as effective as Dane Jackson has been. Yeah. Even if you're not happy with the production he's put on the field so far, hard to find somebody to replace him as a backup that's going to be better than that.
Right. Let's go to the tweet sheet. In terms of what Bills free agent you think will be the easiest to replace, tweet sheet brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills. And Phil leads us off, and he says, Saffold, a good guy, but easier to replace. And, you know, if you just look alone at all of the free agent signings the Bills have made at the guard position, signing people to one-year contracts, two-year contracts over the last several years. It's a long list of guys. I mean, just last offseason alone, you had Greg Manns, Roger Saffold, Greg Van Roten. I mean, run down the list. That was one offseason. The year before that, it was Darrell Williams, John Feliciano, and you know, so interior linemen aren't terribly hard to come by. I think the key, as Steve pointed out, is whether or not you are convinced it's a definitive upgrade over a veteran player where you know definitively where the floor is on that player's ability. Are you better than that? Do you want to bank on potential? Here's the other thing. You're in a win-now mode as a football team. Do you want to bank on potential and hope that guy gets good enough to surpass what Saffold gives you now? Are you banking on that and the coaching of, you know, Aaron Cromer to make him better?
Right.
Or are you just going to say, you know what, we're probably just best served to bring Saffold back on another one-year deal?
Yeah.
That's the big dilemma, and that's part of the projection business that the front office is in.
Right. And so even if you don't bring Saffold back and you draft somebody like everybody, this kid Cody Mock that's everybody's enamored with.
Flavor of the month.
Right. Or anybody else. Is that even if he starts out and you would think he probably, unless you get him in the first round and he drops and he's one of these guys that's got all kinds of tools, maybe he will, but it's going to be hard to think that a guy is going to come in, even if he's playing guard, to play as well as a veteran of the tenure that Saffold has. But that's not really the question. The question is, knowing that your team's good enough and he's not going to stink when he's out there, he may struggle a little bit, but he's going to hold his own. He's going to get better and better week by week so that at the end of the year, he is playing well above the level that you would have gotten out of a guy like Saffold or a guy like Ike Butker or Bates, or you go down the list of guys, you know, Feliciano, all the guards we've had. Is he going to be way ahead of those guys by the end of his first year when you really need him in the playoffs and all of a sudden you're playing against these really good guys? Now he can do more than hold his own. That's what you're talking about. These guys can get good fast when they're playing every day, when they're not worried about anything other than football, when they don't have to go to college classes, where they don't have to do all this other stuff, and they can start focusing on and getting some pro coaching and get into an offense and talk to guys who have done it for a long time, and they just get better. So that's what you're kind of talking about. You can live with a guy who has a tough first month of the regular season in his rookie year. But then he starts to like, oh, now he's holding his own a little bit. And then by the middle of the season, by the bye week, he's like, wow, he did good in those last couple of games. And then he comes back after the bye, takes another step, and it's like, wow, okay.
We can run behind this guy.
Now he's starting to – he's seeing it a little better now. And then by the end of the season, it's like, let's roll. So that is kind of – what you're asked to do as well as a coaching staff and a scouting staff and in training camp. And when you look at these guys in the eye, when you sit down with them in these interviews, you try and find that stuff out.
Yeah.
That's the roll of the dice.
Break time for us here. When we come back, more of your phone calls and more of your thoughts on the tweet sheet. What Bills free agent do you think will be easiest to replace? We'll catch up with you after this break here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. Closing out hour number one here with some of your thoughts on the tweet sheet as we've been asking you today, what Bills free agent do you believe will be the easiest to replace? Uncle Lando chimes in with Poyer. The chemistry is definitely something that will never be recreated, but a decent cover safety can replace Poyer, even though I want him to be a lifer. So it sounds like Uncle Lando is conflicted. I would disagree that he's one of the easiest to replace. You even mentioned Uncle Lando, the chemistry that he and Micah Hyde have had. But all good things must come to an end. And knowing the cap constraints of this team, investing giant money in a 32-year-old safety, as good as Poyer is, just doesn't seem to make the best fiscal sense. And replacing him is not going to be easy. There are some good safety prospects in the draft. Maybe you want to go with a veteran. But it's not – the problem with safety, Steve, is it's not just Poyer. It's Hamlin, whose future playing career is completely up in the air.
Right.
And Jaquan Johnson is also a free agent, as is Dean Marlowe. So It's Micah Hyde.
And nobody.
And nobody, because I think Cam Lewis is even a restricted free agent. So it's Micah Hyde and nobody else. Like, the cupboard is bare. So safety is a very sneaky major need here for this team positionally this offseason.
They are threadbare, thin back there. Yeah, and Mike is coming back off, you know, a herniated disc.
And he's in the last year of his contract.
Right.
So you probably not only have to sign one, you've got to draft one, maybe, and pick up another as an undrafted rookie.
I would love to see them sign two safeties that we don't know in free agency like they did with Poyer and Hyde 5-6 years ago.
That would be good, right?
Right.
I welcome that kind of scouting.
Right, because remember, that was what they did. They signed Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer like the same day or a day apart.
To good money contracts.
And, yeah, to like $5 million bucks a pop.
For guys that were relatively unknown.
Right, and it turns out it was the move of the franchise, I think, during that time. You know, you can make a case it was the most underrated move they ever made.
Poyer, as an unknown, signed for 4 years, $17 million. Hyde had a little bit more of a track record, played on a successful team with the Packers, and he went 6 years, $30 million.
Yeah.
Like, just out of the chute,
yeah,
coming in here in 2017.
Yeah, and everybody's like, that defensive head coach mentality. We were all talking about it, right? And sure enough, it turns out, you know, after 1 year, even every coach in the league, like Bill Belichick, saying, man, those guys are unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, the two of them out there is killing us. We don't know what they're doing. So it was awesome. So I'd like to see him do that again.
Yeah. Noda on the tweet sheet says, Saffold, Singletary, and then maybe Poyer. Poyer is good, but there are some great options at safety in the 2023 draft, and he's going to be 32 years old. All right, so we covered the Poyer angle. We covered the Saffold angle. Let's talk Singletary. Contract is up. Still a young player. Is he a player with elite physical traits? No, but he's a reliable player. But he's playing at a position where, you know, as much as I like Devin, it's a dime a dozen position. I mean, think about this, Steve, and I know we've mentioned this on the show. Their undrafted rookie running back last year was the flavor of the month during the preseason, Raheem Blackshear. He didn't make the team, but go look at his production down in Carolina in a committee backfield with the Panthers at the end of the year. He's playing quality ball down there.
Yeah. And
it's an undrafted rookie.
It's a tough call. And I'll say this. Most people are of that mind. They're like, I don't know, I think we could do better physically than Devin Singletary. Compare Devin Singletary's play at running back to Roger Saffold's play at guard. I mean, are they the same? Was he better? Certainly he got more opportunity because he got handed the ball a lot, and he was on the field, and he was doing all this stuff. But is, you know, overall, you look around the National Football League, was Devin Singletary a better running back than Roger Saffold was a left guard? And everybody's like, you know, throwing Roger Saffold under the bus, and okay. But these are still two guys who are contributors, major contributors on a team that was, you know, 13-3 and the two seed in the conference. You don't know how much that's going to – you don't know how much that is, you know, is a part of all that.
Yeah.
You know, and any changes you make could either, you know, take you a notch up or a notch down closer to, you know, 14-3 or
right.
12-5.
Six.
12-6.
Or five. No,
12
you're
and
right.
5.
Your math's better.
So we'll see. I don't, you know, it's hard. You can't really do that. That's why it's hard to evaluate guys and cross over like that. You know, is he a better running back than Saffold is an offensive lineman? I don't know. Yeah. I think a lot of people think they're pretty close.
Yeah, and I think the tricky part here is Singletary was technically, quote-unquote, the primary back in the committee backfield because he had the longest track record, and I think the coaching staff trusted him the most. But next year, you could totally see James Cook ascending into the primary role with Hines as his, you know, 1A or 2. So now all you need is to put a 3 in there, and that could be an undrafted rookie. And I think that's why some people see Singletary as replaceable. We got to take a break here because hour number two is going to begin with the executive director of the Senior Bowl, one Jim Nagy, going to join us to talk about some of those prospects that performed in that game last week and how things might look for Buffalo in terms of options at pick 27. Jim Nagy coming up next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, welcome to hour number two here on a Wednesday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. Pleased to be joined now by the executive director of the Senior Bowl, who pulled off another star-studded event just last week and can actually breathe a little bit now. So he was kind enough to give us a little bit of his time. It's Jim Nagy joining us. Jim, have you had the big collective exhale? Because we know this is a heavy lift for you and your crew down there.
Yeah, Chris, Steve, thanks for having me on. We have. We're starting to exhale. You know, everyone asks me during the week, when do you get to do that? They think it's like when we get to game day, but it's not until all 125 guys are on a plane and out of here safely. Right. You can exhale. So, no, we've done some debrief meetings here on Monday. High level stuff, just going over the week. And, you know, now it's just, I'm getting hand cramps. I've got a lot of thank you notes to write this week. So we're still getting some stuff done, but definitely on the decompression mode.
And it's interesting, we were looking at this in the history of the Senior Bowl with our own franchise, the Buffalo Bills, over the last, since 2017, this new with Sean McDermott as head coach, 23 players have come through the Senior Bowl that have ended up through the draft or undrafted free agents as Buffalo Bills. 23 over the last, you know, 5 years. This will be the sixth year. Do you have any idea about whether that's average for most NFL teams, or do the Bills kind of do that as a general rule?
Trying to do the math in my head, that seems about average. You know, like last year we had five teams take six players out of the game. We had five teams take five players out of the game. So yeah, that seems about average, but you know, they've done really well in the defensive backfield with like Teron Johnson and the guy over my shoulder here, over there, Tredavious, obviously DeMar Hamlin and guys like that. It seems like they've gotten a lot of DBs, but I know in the last couple of years, like Boogie Basham and, they've gotten some good ones, and obviously the QB is a big part of what they're doing.
Yeah, Saran Neal and Levi Wallace, two other DBs that they got out of the Senior Bowl also. So offensive line is an area that is of concern to Bills fans. I don't know if I know another fan base that talks as much about offensive line play as Bills fans up here. They're pretty well educated, and they want some upgrades, and you were not short of O-line talent at the Senior Bowl. In fact, there were some days where they just flat out dominated in the practice sessions. They even had three guys sitting on a bench together. I think it was Osiris Torrance, Darnell Wright, and there was one other fella next to him. Might have been Bergeron or Mock. I can't remember. And I'm like, wow, that's a pretty good trio that a lot of NFL teams would take in a second. what do you make of the group you had this year overall? And would you say it's one of the better ones that you've had since you've been executive director?
Well, I'll start by saying this. I think the Bills fan base isn't alone. Just paying attention to Twitter, I think every fan base in the league wants better offensive line play. and I do think that's why a lot of these guys are going to get, I wouldn't say overdrafted, but maybe pushed a little bit. I think teams are going to really emphasize offensive line in the first three rounds. That's where you're getting a lot of your immediate starters from. So we had a lot of those guys. I expect the majority of our offensive line crew, which was 22 to 24 guys. I think we brought in 24. I think we ended with 22 or 21. I think those guys are mostly going to be off the board in those first three or four rounds. A lot of guys, I don't know about, you know, we've had some really good offensive line classes. The first year we were here, we had 10 first round picks, and I believe six of them were offensive linemen. So that's really a position group that's been one of strength. And you rattled off some of the names, Cody Mauch from North Dakota State, Osiris Torrance from Florida, Jalen Duncan from Maryland, you know, a couple of the right tackles, Darnell Wright from Tennessee, DeJuan Jones from Ohio State. I mean, I think there could be five, six, seven of these guys go in the first round this year.
Have you gotten it? And you said you were doing some wrap-up meetings, some kind of wrap-up kind of overall encompassing, you know, rehash of the week. Did you, and how much did you get feedback from the coaches who handled this, the clubs, you know, the players? How what kind of feedback did you get from the head coaches involved?
Yeah, you know, that was a new format for us. We've had the full coaching staff for 73 years. So when that was thrown at us this summer that we were going to have a collection of assistants, you know, that took me back a little bit. But you know what? After going through the week with those guys, it worked great. It was awesome. And more, most importantly, I think it was great for our players. Rather than be exposed to just two teams behind the scenes all week, they were exposed to 16 non-playoff teams. And again, we haven't done a deep dive into the detailed stuff. I think I tried to speak to each one of them individually before they left Mobile on Sunday morning. Just thanking them for being a big part of our week. And then telling them I welcome any feedback. Obviously, you're not going to go through this for the first time and not have any bumps or things we can do better. So, yeah, I think, you know, and again, the overwhelming response was, Jim, this was a great week, incredible. They enjoyed just the camaraderie and learning from each other. A lot of these guys have only worked on one or two staffs, so to really network and be open to different schemes and philosophies and values. I think that was a great thing for our coaches, but no, we have to do that more formally as we work through the next couple weeks.
One position group that looks to be particularly strong this year, according to the DraftKings, is the tight end spot. Some people are projecting as many as five could go in the top 50, which, you know, is not commonplace for that position, although maybe it's drifting that way with how many more pass-catching tight ends seem to be cropping up in the college ranks. You had one who probably will go in the top 50, and Luke Musgrave out of Oregon State. I don't even know if I call him a tight end. I mean, he's like a tight receiver, Jim. I don't know. Maybe it's because he's jersey number 88, but I watch him run, and I kind of see Mike Gesicki all over again. I don't know what you think about him.
Yeah, you're right about the speed factor, and that showed up during the week. The guy can really get down the seam. He made a bunch of big plays down the field during the week, and he was a guy that needed a big week. He only played in two games this year for Oregon State, was injured, and the guys up on the Beaver staff think this guy could run in the high 4.4s. And based off what it looked like on the field, I wouldn't rule that out. He's definitely going to be a 4.5 guy, which at 6'6", 260 pounds, that is a big man moving. So, I think he's safely going to be a top 50 pick. We had another guy, Dalton Kincaid, was going to come play in the game, who'd accepted an invite from Utah. And then an injury in the very last game of the season for the Utes, and he couldn't move forward with the draft process. But I think Dalton could be a first round pick. Luke might too. I think both those guys are safe. So if you need a tight end need, I know Knox has been a great player up there. Tommy Sweeney and Quentin Morris are Senior Bowl alums, depth level guys for you. I think Q made a big jump for you guys, talking to the guys on the staff. But yeah, if you're looking for one, it's certainly a good year to need one.
And give us an idea of the buzz, because there's always buzz going on. There's people, I mean, these practices are attended with a lot of interest by teams around the NFL. They're more interested really in the practices than they are even in watching these guys play in the game. It's just a great way to get really close to these guys. Who created, give me a handful of guys who created a lot of buzz that surprised the coaching staffs and the people who are watching practice week in, week out.
Yeah, you know, there's a number of those guys, and I actually saw Brandon Bean down in the field a couple times. He was right up in the middle of it, so Bills fans would hopefully be glad to hear that their GM was downfield level, really trying to take it all in. You know, a couple guys that stand out was the guy that we brought up the week before from the NFLPA game, a linebacker, safety, hybrid player from Sacramento State, Marte Mapu. He's only, you know, he's 6'3", 220 pounds, but he hits like a ton of bricks. This guy's got a lot of pop in his body for someone that size. He hits like a much bigger man. And in the 9-on-7 periods, he really stood out. He had a couple really strong days and then got hurt, couldn't play in the game. But for a small school guy, he certainly generated a lot of buzz. I'm going to cheat on you. I'm going to peek above the computer here and, just look up at the board and cheat a little bit. But, you know, at running back, Tajay Spears was the guy that we had on as a day two player. I don't know if like the draft Knicks or people outside the league did, but not Tajay was our overall practice player of the week. And that was voted on by 32 league execs. I pulled one guy from every club. And he was kind of the overwhelming pick at that position. So Tajay had his kind of coming out party in the Cotton Bowl against USC with five touchdowns. And he really followed it up this week with an unbelievable week here in Mobile. Big play guy, big play, open field, space player. You get him to the second level and he's going to make a lot happen. So those two guys stick out, but we could kind of go on and on. There's a lot of players that, Kate came in maybe a little bit under the radar that certainly leaving Mobile aren't on the radar anymore.
Yeah, and you know, for the Bills, I think the fans, their focus is we got to go all in on offense, more weapons for Josh, get him a better line and all of this. And Steve and I were just talking about this last segment, kind of a hidden positional need of pretty significant importance is the safety spot, with Poyer being a free agent, DeMar Hamlin's future playing career up in the air, and then Jaquan Johnson and Dean Marlowe, the veteran safety, also free agents. I mean, it's basically Micah Hyde, and the rest of the cupboard is bare. Chris Smith is a guy we saw an awful lot on national TV, you know, with the SEC being on CBS every weekend and playing for a high-profile team like Georgia. What kind of week did he have, and what do you think is his appeal, you know, for NFL scouts?
Yeah, Chris had a great year. Chris is one of, he was eligible for the Senior Bowl last year. He was a guy that exercised that extra COVID year, went back to school, and I'm glad he did. He, last year he kind of fell a little bit below the line for our game. We had him in like the sixth round a year ago. And, digging into a little more with Chris in the coaching staff at Georgia, he finally got healthy. He had a healthy offseason. He was bothered with an injury in 2021. And not only did he look like a different player, he almost looked like a different athlete this year. And I think you can attribute that to the health factor. He looked quicker. He looked more explosive. He was covering more ground. He was making more plays. Before this year, he kind of looked like that cerebral guy, which he is very cerebral, really heady. I know he did a great job in the interviews talking to teams, but he looked like one of those guys that just put himself in the right spot to make plays. And this year he was actually getting off the spot and making plays, if that makes sense. So, he had a great week down here. Jamie Robinson from Florida State is another guy that I think is going to be a day two player. I think Chris will go on day two somewhere. I think those guys plug in as starters. J.L. Skinner from Boise State, little different physical package at 6'3", 210 pounds. Than those other guys, but again, JL was practice player of the week at the DB spot for his team, and he had a great week. So there's certainly, it's a pretty good safety class if you need one as well. There's some starters to be had in that group if you're going to lose as much as it sounds like you might lose. There's some answers in this draft.
Yeah, one of the things that's been true of the draft over the last 3 or 4 years has been full of top quality first round wide receivers. And this year, not so much. There are some guys out there, of course, but they're fewer and far between rather than guys you could get that are day one starters, even in the high second round, that kind of thing, in the third round. Guys who are difference makers have been found because the wide receiver group has been so deep. This year, it's kind of a little bit different than that. It starts with a guy like Rashee Rice from SMU, guys like that who showed up. And give us a little synopsis of the wide receiver group.
Yeah, I mean, there's good players to be found all the way through. I mean, if you scout them right, some of these guys get really undervalued in the draft process. I think Khalil Shakir that you guys got last year, and I think the fifth round. I mean, I talking to the guys up there, they're excited about what he's going to be in year two. So there's talent to be found. Rashee Rice is a really good player. He's big. He's makes a lot of contested plays. He's got quickness. He's got run after the catch. He had a good week. Jaden Reed from Michigan State was maybe the most dynamic receiver that we had during the week. But, you know, just in terms of off the line releases, getting open, he had a great week. Tank Dell from Houston, a really another dynamic slot player. I think this wide receiver class is getting undervalued. There's some good ones. I think in that third, fourth round mix, you're going to see some guys like a Terry McLaurin a couple of years ago from the Commanders, whatever that was 4 years ago. Now, I think that might've been my first Senior Bowl. Terry went in the third, and now look at him. I think there's going to be a couple guys in this class that when it's all said and done, are going to elevate and be really good starters.
Do you think that, and maybe just put your old NFL scout hat back on for a second, do you think part of the reason why we may see some receivers undervalued is because, let's face it, the NFL's been spoiled the last few years with like some true alpha male, no doubter, you know, top half of the first round receivers the last 3 or 4 years. And while they might not be in as plentiful supply this year, you're certainly going to be able people that can help you sooner rather than later. Why is there some phenomenon we're not aware of that, you know, maybe you as a former scout can shed some light on as to why that may or may not happen in terms of undervaluing some of the guys in this year's class?
Well, first of all, I never take off my NFL scouting hat.
Right, right.
That's a permanent fixture. I still approach this job just like I did when I was in the league. But, you know, I do think more of these – the good thing for the NFL teams is you're seeing more immediate dividends at the wide receiver position. I know, Steve, when you played, it took guys 2 or 3 years to get up to speed. You might not get anything out of them. You know, they might have to come in and play special teams for a couple of years, you know, and be your understudy on teams before they really broke through. And now we're seeing a lot of guys come in right away and have big contributions at the wide receiver spot. And I think that's attributable to a lot of things. I think the NFL's adapted. They're pulling up concepts from college. I think the proliferation of 7-on-7 can help. But yeah, you're going to see more guys transition quickly. And there's going to be a bunch of guys that right now people are talking about in that 4th, 5th round area that are going to step in and be really good players. You know, like just out of our game last year, look what Christian Watson did the second half of the year for the Green Bay Packers. And, yeah. And I know Chris 34th overall, you kind of expect that production out of a high draft pick, but you know, there's good players to be had outside of the first round. You don't have to take a receiver in the top 20 picks to get good production out of them.
So you've been on this end of the college draft for a long time now, scouting guys and now running this Senior Bowl and seeing these guys come through, and you've been a scout and now you're talking to these guys. What is it the same as it's always been? I mean, to evaluate these guys, how has it changed, and are they getting any better at it?
In terms of the players, yeah, I think all these guys are getting bigger, faster, stronger. And I've been doing this, it's about 25 years now, dating myself, but yeah, they're at every position. Now these guys every year, you know, you maybe don't notice it year from year, but, if you just think about what guys looked like 5 years ago or 10 years ago, I think that all the training they're doing now in the off season, the nutrition, and, it's a little bit of the Tom Brady effect. You know, I think that the TB12 factor, look at, you know, when you played, Steve, a lot of guys, you know, felt like they were towards the end in their early 30s, you know, and that's when it was over for them. And that's why it's funny. You see the reaction, around the draft time with some of these, you know, quote unquote, older prospects, you know, the 24-year-olds, the 25-year-olds. Well, if you're playing now in your, you know, mid 30s and you're gaining a couple of years on the back end of your career, who cares if you're a couple of years older? And I think, you know, we're only seeing that because of the, you know, the extra COVID year and whatnot. But I think these players are getting better every year. They're just the training, the nutrition, it's all making for a better football player now.
Last one I've got for you, Jim. I know I already mentioned that a lot of people are of the opinion the tight end class is a strong one this year. Two position groups that are even getting more hype than the tight ends is corner and edge rusher. Are you seeing the same kind of depth that some of these other, you know, draft experts are seeing at those two positions?
Certainly the edge category. We thought coming into the week when I was asked before the game what I thought our best positions were, I thought running back in the edge crew were our strongest positions. And that held true to form. You know, in the edge group, you got guys like Keon White from Georgia Tech. Looks like he's a first-round lock now. He had a really good week. Derek Hall from Auburn had a monster week and he looks, sounds like he's going to be a first round pick. So that group was really strong, but the group that really surprised me was our corner class coming into the game. We had a lot of grades in that, you know, early day 3-4 roundish area. And then you just saw guys take off and we had a bigger group. It's a longer group. Darius Rush from South Carolina, big long body, Julius Brents from Kansas State. Those Anthony Johnson from Virginia, we had some big corners really step up and play big. And you look at the Super Bowl this week, you know, Joshua Williams was in the game last year from Fayetteville State. The Chiefs picked him in the 4th round. And then they waited all the way to the 7th to get a guy, Jalen Watson from Washington State. Those will be the starting two corners in the Super Bowl this weekend. And they got them in the 4th and 7th round, same body types, big 6'1", 6'2" guys with long arms. A lot of the guys that have a similar body type were guys that showed out during our week last week here in Mobile.
Jim, it's great talking to you. Really appreciate it. We'll look forward to seeing you at the Combine when we run cross paths.
Great, guys. Thanks for having me back on. I'll see you in Indy.
All right. Thanks again. That's Jim Nagy, Executive Director of the Senior Bowl. And he's kind of got the early look-see at everybody because he's scouting these guys just to set up invites to the Senior Bowl. So before we even lay eyes on him at the Senior Bowl, this guy's like watched him and his staff have watched tape on a bunch of them, you know, all of them, 120 plus guys over the course of, you know, October, November, December. So, you know, the guy's got an early look at a lot of the guys that he thinks are fits. Naturally, he's looking for senior eligible players for the Senior Bowl, duh. But still in all, he's watching an awful lot of tape. That's why he said, I never take my scouting hat off, because he's kind of doing the same thing he did when he was a scout. He's right. Just doing it for a showcase game now.
Yeah, that's – yeah, and it's – they do not – I mean, that's why it's a career where you just got to be comfortable living in a hotel. I mean, you're just traveling everywhere. And you imagine what Jim Nagy's doing. He's got to go to college games to see guys in person. He can watch film too, but you see them in person, what do they look like, what kind of athlete are they, do they stand out on that field, and can he get them? Then you got to reach out to them and see if they want to play. And if they do, great. If they don't, well, you got to find somebody to fill that spot. It's, you talk about a guy going from Alabama, Georgia, and all those schools all the way down to, you know,
Fayetteville State.
Exactly. Exactly.
But Josh Williams from Fayetteville State, who was in the Senior Bowl last year, fourth round pick of the Chiefs, is going to start in the Super Bowl on Sunday.
Yeah.
At corner. Like, it can happen. It really can.
That elevator is an express elevator right there. I mean, you go to the top real quick.
I got to give it to the Chiefs. I really do, because they had to sacrifice high-priced players on the defensive side of the ball this past offseason for the sake of revamping their receiving core. Mm-hmm. They throw Tyreek Hill overboard because he was going to cost too much money, and it was too much money to invest in their mind in one player. And they spread that money out over a group of players at the receiver position, power and numbers there. And they said, we're not going to re-sign Tyrann Mathieu. We're not going to re-sign starting corner Charvarius Ward. And I think they had let Bashaud Breeland go the previous year.
Now you think about the decision
Daniel Sorensen out the door.
You think about the decision they made of their wide receiver core. Tyreek Hill's getting $30 million from the Dolphins. They're paying, the Chiefs are paying $21 million for like five guys total.
For this year,
For this year.
They made it work.
That's the puzzle.
And on the defensive side, kudos to their defensive staff, Steve Spagnuolo and the crew. They got two rookies ready to play right away. And kudos to their scouting staff. I mean, they brought in guys that they thought could be quick on the uptake and step in and play a major role. And they did that. They did that. And corner is an important spot. And they got a guy in the fourth and the seventh round starting for them. And I mean, are they excelling? I don't know if you want to go that far, but they're holding it down, and they got a pass rush on the front end to help them out. So, you know, Williams is in the right place at the right time, and the AFC title game gets a pick off a deflected pass. That was a huge play that pretty much ended the threat that Cincinnati was posing to climb back into that football game.
Yeah, and it works, you know, and certainly the Chiefs are doing it in a way, you know, you've said it a bunch of times, the Bills are a little bit like behind –
the build.
The build. The Bills got their quarterback a year behind, signed him to an extension a year behind, that kind of thing, and just kind of that's where they're at. Certainly they've risen to heights the Bills are only aspiring to right now. You got to get back to the AFC Championship game. You got to play well on that day and get to the Super Bowl and play well on that day. And the Bills have yet to do that, but they are, you know, you're talking about an eyebrow away, mm-hmm. an eyelash away, and that's as close as they are. All these teams, Cincinnati, Kansas City, Buffalo, Philly, San Francisco, you go down the list. There's only through the end of this regular season, you could see the difference in the teams at the top of both conferences.
Yeah. You mentioned Rashee Rice to him from SMU. I like that guy. 6'2", 203. You go watch his tape, and Jim mentioned it. The thing that stands out about his game, contested catches left and right. I mean, that guy is out jumping the defender and winning time and time and time. And you might say, well, hold on. Can he not get separation? What's the problem? That's not all of his catches. But there are more than you're used to seeing on a college tape from that guy. And he just bodies people out and makes the catch. So interesting prospect, and I'm curious to see where he's going to go. He might be like an early day two guy. But as Jim said himself, you don't necessarily have to get that receiver in round one to get a guy that's going to be able to help you sooner rather than later in this year's draft class. You may not have the alpha males like the Garrett Wilsons, you know, the Jameson Williams and those guys, but you're going to have guys that can help you right away. And the Bills, fortunately for them, they don't need a number one. They need a number two that you right. can count on week in and week out. No, and you might be able to find that in round two or three.
Yeah, and they need somebody to help. Somebody that can get open, somebody that the defense has to worry about to a certain degree, if not a lot. So I think they're going to get a guy. If they do take a receiver in the first or second round, Brownie, I think you can bet that when you look at him on paper, he's at least going to look the part. He's going to have some traits.
We got to take a break here, but when we come back, more of your thoughts on the tweet sheet and more of your phone calls as we talk Bills free agent list and who you think might be the easiest for Buffalo to replace, knowing they can't bring all 22 back in the fold. We're back in a moment here on One Bills Live. Stay tuned. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And we've got to get back to the tweet sheet here as we are getting your thoughts on the Bills free agents most easily replaced in your mind. Guys that if they have to be replaced, you're not in a veritable panic as to how the roster is going to look without them. We should mention that NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell made his State of the League address at the Super Bowl, as he does every Super Bowl week. And he talked about more flexible scheduling, no longer just for Sunday night games, but that Monday night games will be flexed as well going forward, and that it's not out of the realm of possibility that Thursday night games may be flexed at some point in the future. Does that mean they're just going to flex them away? Because I'd be happy if they did that. I'm not a huge fan of Thursday night football.
That ain't going anywhere, bro.
Well, not with the Amazon deal.
That's not going
but
anywhere.
Here's the thing. Do you think that Goodell threw that out there, like, and not today, but eventually Thursday night football could be flexed too? Do you think that's done to appease Jeff Bezos and the Amazon people after a horrible slate of Thursday night games this year? Do you remember the Thursday night games we watched this year? Holy cow, they were bad.
They were bad.
They were awful.
And I was disappointed in the broadcast as much as I was in the you gotta bring something to the table. It's an NFL game, and it's the best league on the planet, and it's the most watched television show in the country all the time, every week. And
match the appeal with the call.
Come on.
I'm with you.
And I get it. They were bad games. Bad matchups, bad games, bad play. Okay.
They were really bad, some of them.
I've never been a sympathetic listener to a guy who says, well, it was a bad game, the call we weren't in. I'm not about that.
I am with you on that.
And so,
because you have a job to do, too.
Yes. And so, having said that, it's only a matter of time. Thursday night football will get flexed.
Well, Bezos is like, I paid $1 billion for this.
Well, I'll tell you, he's all right with it, because even the first week alone, they got umpteen million new subscribers.
Right. And the league is going to give them, I can't remember if it's this coming season or 2024, they're getting a Black Friday game.
Well, there you go.
Because obviously they make a ton of money on Black Friday on Amazon, and now they're going to stick a game on there too to draw even more eyeballs? Holy crow.
Amazon probably couldn't be happier with the early returns, particularly given the fact that the product wasn't what they thought it would be or as good as it could be, and they still had the viewership that they did, I think they're fine. But the league has always been a really, really, really good partner to work with for these broadcast companies.
The other interesting note that Roger Goodell brought up, concussions went up in number, but he said the reason why that happened primarily was due to a broader, more conservative definition of what a concussion is. So in other words, independent neurological consultants, medical officials on the sideline, maybe it was not a true-to-form concussion in the traditional sense, but it was enough to pull a player off the field, put him in concussion protocol. That goes towards the total for the season.
Yeah. I'll say this.
I still think we're one short from week three, but that's just me.
I did notice a number of players, more players than I have ever noticed before, pointed off the field by the officials, by this, and say
Teddy getting, Bridgewater in New York.
Right.
He didn't even have one.
Right.
But
they're,
he was
they're checking him out.
Yeah.
They're checking him out. They got they evaluated a ton more guys this year, and as you would expect, they caught a few that might have gone under the radar in years prior. So that would elevate the number somewhat as well. I don't think there's anything inherent about the game that's different this year as to why the concussions went up. Most of them come on special teams plays, on punt coverage, but you would assume, probably rightfully so in this case, that because they broadened the definition and they started pointing guys out for less and less symptoms or less and less reasons,
well, and
you get more.
It prompted more evaluations, so you're going to find more concussions when you have more evaluations.
And I'll say this too. I'm not saying this, that for anything, they should catch all of them, 100%.
Right.
You know, and that's, going forward, they're going to try and do that.
Well, they're going to layer their approach, you know, with more and more layers. Think of it like it's the old Swiss cheese philosophy. If you keep stacking slices of Swiss cheese, eventually all the holes are going to be gone because all the layers are going to cover up all the holes.
Right.
And that's what you're trying to do with concussion protocol and concussion evaluation. Yeah. And the league each year is getting a little bit better at it.
Yeah, you're such a foodie. But the yes.
It works, though.
That's correct. And I'll say this, too. Even the casual fan, if you've been watching the league for even a handful of years, like 5 years, you've noticed a vast array of new type of helmets that guys are wearing. They're all different kinds now. Yep. Totally. And they're looking weirder and different and
space age.
Funky shapes and all that. There's a ton of that going on. And that's all player safety. So kudos to the league for doing that. And I got to say, kudos to them for being as transparent as they are and addressing it full front. You know, just saying, hey, you know, we had more concussions this year.
What Bills free agent will be the easiest to replace in your mind? You know, not all 22 are coming back. So if you got a player in mind that you think the Bills are capable of replacing without losing much in terms of talent on the field, you let us know at 803-0550. We go back to the phones and to Mark in West Seneca. What do you got for us, Mark? You're on One Bills Live.
Hi, guys. As far as letting a guy go that can be replaced, I'm going to not go a free agent. I think it's time to move on from Ed Oliver.
Okay.
I don't believe the money he's going to command, even with his fifth-year option this year, is worth it anymore. And we can't continue to have a guy that highly drafted to be such a detriment in the run game. So that's where I would go with that.
Okay, so his number at 10.7, you would want to, I'm guessing you want to trade him so you can at least get something in return?
Exactly. We'll use that money somewhere else. Even if I'm not the biggest Edmonds fan, but if we needed to use that money to keep Edmonds, then I'd be for that.
Okay.
But, I just think they need to be more formidable at defensive tackle. So, and the reason I called, though, was listening to the gentleman from the Senior Bowl, and he mentioned, and I missed the guy's name, the hybrid linebacker safety kind of guy.
Yeah, when
he mentioned that kid, it came to my mind that I was thinking, if the Bills do end up letting Edmonds walk, do you guys think, first of all, is he capable of moving into the middle? And would the Bills ever consider about drafting a kid like that, putting in Milano's place and letting Milano play in the middle? Is something like that could be done. And then real quick, after listening to everything he said about draft picks, I'm more convinced first round offensive line, second and third wide receiver safety, however it falls out, whoever's a better value at each spot. And then I come back with another offensive lineman in the fourth round. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
But thanks, guys. Now listen.
All right. Thanks, Mark. Good call. I don't hate your draft preferences. I think, as we all know, the draft rarely falls in a way that caters value-wise to your positional needs. And we also have to do the wait and see. Namely, wait and see what Brandon Bean and his pro personnel staff does in free agency first, where Brandon has made no secret of the fact that he tries to fill as many positional holes as possible going into the draft with free agency so as to afford them the freedom to go best player available in most cases.
The problem with moving Milano down inside is twofold. One, like, for instance, they drafted Terrell Bernard last year and he and Milano, both instinctive players. Terrell Bernard is an inside linebacker like Tremaine Edmonds, but completely different. He's physically smaller and faster and all that kind of stuff and instinctive, whereas Tremaine Edmonds is this big, huge physical presence who is really mechanical, and what he's doing is less instinctive. If you put, say, for instance, Terrell Bernard evolves into your starting middle linebacker and Matt Milano's out there, you got two guys that weigh less than 230 trying to stop the run in the NFL. That's hard.
Especially if you're playing a team like New England twice a year.
Right.
With a 230-pound running back.
That puts you in a tough spot physically. Unless you've got four massive defensive tackles up front who can soak up blockers, maybe you got a chance. So, maybe.
Yeah. We got to take a break here. Some final thoughts on the Tweet Sheet when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, back here on One Bills Live, Chris Brown, Steve Tasker, and we have a number of people that take in the show every day, either on radio or on MSG, our television network. Thanks for doing it. We have some special viewers West, Steve.
Yeah, Derby, Kansas. My dad, Gordon, is in the hospital. I want to say hi to him. Dad and my brother Keith's with him, listening to the show on the app, and want to say get well soon, Pops. I'm thinking about you. Love you. Ben. Doing well out there in Derby. We get people listening from all over, and today I don't know if it's for usual that they listen to the show. I'd like to say they're like everyday listeners.
every single day
they're
all
listening
2 hours uninterrupted. We are their total darkness. We're their isolation retreat for them.
They're needing isolation after they hear me, after they hear us. But yeah,
the Aaron Rodgers equivalent.
Yes, get well soon, Dad. I appreciate you, and Keith, you too. It's good to see you guys. I'll be out there soon. I'm sure to see you.
Yeah. So if we put a bow on this, I would say that, you know, who's replaceable really isn't a choice in some cases based on cost of a free agent. So really the Bills are going to play the hand they're dealt, you know, based on dollars and cents, their cap situation and everything else. And hopefully free agency will fill some of the holes that are inevitably created due to some people perhaps getting priced right out of the Bills' price range.
Yeah. And I'm sure that it's going to be one of those places where there's going to be some surprises, but there's also going to be some that are inevitabilities as well.
Yeah.
And we don't know who they're going to be until you see it, but position has a lot to do with it. The value around the league of has a lot to do
demand.
With it. Some teams value positions more so than the Bills would, and the Bills value them more than other teams would, and that gets put into the mix as well.
Yeah, that's why you kind of wonder where it's going to shake out. I mean, you already hear rumblings out there about teams that might be interested in some of Buffalo's free agents.
Yeah, Tremaine Edmonds gets a lot of play.
Yeah.
Because teams don't like to play offense against him. You know, the guy is just this huge presence.
So much space.
Yeah, it's like this huge shadow that comes over your offense that you got to think, oh, I got to throw it around the guy or under the guy, or I got to deal with that guy.
And you don't want to try to throw over him.
And you can't even get to the sideline before he does, right? So a lot of teams covet somebody like Tremaine, and Bills fans have always been polarized by him. So it's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out.
That'll do it for us today for this Wednesday edition of One Bills Live. We will be back tomorrow where our featured guest will be ESPN's Sam Acho. He'll talk to us about the Super Bowl. He's also got a new book coming out. We'll talk to him about that tomorrow. We'll see you folks at 1 p.m.